on Cripple Creek, and she sends me in my spring a leap. And she mends me, I don't have the speed. She defends me, a drunkard's dream, if I ever did see one.
On a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning, we're talking water in the CAP. We're getting some water out of the sky today. Make sure your sprinklers are turned off. You're not wasting any of it. Every drop saved is one drop away from having regulations put on us. On that 320-mile ditch?
336.
Right. 336-mile ditch. How many? There's obviously a lot of elevation changes that go through that. Is it all powered just by gravity flow once it's pumped out of Colorado?
Well, yes and no. The terminus, the end of the 336-mile canal is nearly 3,000 feet, vertical feet higher than where the water is taken off the Colorado River. So it does have to be pumped up, but it's a combination of pump and then gravity flow, pump and then gravity flow. And we have 15 pumping plants from between the river and the end that pump it up and then let it flow, gravity flow. And if you look at photos of the canal and you see it zigzagging across the desert and so forth, in addition to just this marvel of engineering that built this huge thing, and the way that it zigzags is to use those contours of the land that occur naturally to allow it to flow before it has to be pumped up again. And very, very smart civil engineers working for the United States designed that whole thing. It's amazing.
If I put in an inner tube at the beginning of the canal, how long will it take me to float to the end?
Well, the average speed of, well, first of all, you get chopped up by one of those 15 pumping plants.
Sure.
But if they weren't there.
We portage around those.
Yeah, the average speed of the water is about somewhere between 2 and 4 miles an hour, depending on the time of the year. So average of 3 miles an hour, it would take you 100 hours to go from one end of the canal to the other on average.
So it would dry up pretty quick in just a couple of days if the pumps were turned off.
Yeah, it would. There's about, I think, just by my quick back of the envelope calculations, about 30,000 acre feet, which sounds like a big number, and it is a lot of water, but it's a small percentage of the annual throughput of the canal. So it needs to keep moving, and we need to pump more in all the time. It is just a conveyance system. It's not so much a storage system. We've got Lake Pleasant that does that for us. We get to put water in and out of Lake Pleasant during the year as a regulatory reservoir to make up for when water is available, when we can pump it, when it's cheaper to pump it based on power costs and things like that. Very, very clever, redundant system to allow for at the end of the day, there's water in the canal to deliver that customer when they expect it to be delivered.
Was Lake Pleasant part of the development of the CAP?
There was a Lake Pleasant there before, and there was a dam that had been there for many years. But part of the CAP construction was to build a new or a bigger dam and enlarge the size of Lake Pleasant for the direct goal of having this storage reservoir. And there's about 800,000 acre feet, which is half a year of supply for us. It's in Lake Pleasant. We wouldn't, except in extreme circumstances, ever use all of that at once. But it does allow us to put some in, take it out, smooth out the flow during the year from when the growing seasons are, when it's hotter, folks take more water. It's cheaper to pump in the winter, so we fill the lake up in the winter and take water out, let it flow out of the lake in the summer when power is more expensive.
It's a little savings account.
It really is.
Well, I'm convinced that some of the engineers that worked on the project were the guys I used to water ski the canals with in the 60s. When I heard y'all were building a 336-mile ditch, I thought, that's going to be so fun. I can water ski the whole way down. But y'all made it really hard for guys to water ski the canal.
Yeah, it is. Now that it's built, and as it's been built, there's multiple layers of fencing. It's hard to get to. There's locked gates. And the primary reason for that is it's dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, we did do a fair amount of water skiing in the canals east of Scottsdale, there between Scottsdale, I think it was Granite Reef Dam, back in the 60s
Wild West,
and 70s.
Yes.
Yeah, in the Wild West. What about as you dig this ditch across the state, what about animal traffic patterns?
It's a great question. Both animals and other features of nature, such as existing waterways,
sure,
streams,
sure,
creeks, things like that. They're not there all the time, but they're there. We had to build around those things. So not around, like steer something around it, but build a crossing for animals to walk over. And if you see these things close up, they're pretty amazing. They're covered with dirt and rocks and plants so that the animals don't realize that they're 15 feet off the ground above a body of water, and they can just walk from one side of the canal to the other without almost kind of like a pathway just for them.
And that has worked?
They figured it out. They've figured it out. And it's for many species, it's the law that we can't do anything that will interfere with their ability to survive in their habitat.
And as you're traversing the state from west to east, you're literally dissecting thousands of different washes.
That's right.
And you're now creating a dam up against wash after wash after wash after wash. And how is that accounted for?
Well, potentially it would be a dam unless there was some way for the water to flow from one side to the other. And similar to the animals, there's a passageway that's created for those flows, either under the canal or on top of the canal. Overshoots and undershoots, we call them. It's pretty clever, huh?
Yeah.
But that's a way to not interrupt that hydrology either, because even that water belongs to somebody. Lots of folks would say to us, well, why don't you just divert that water into the canal? Wouldn't that be a great way to get some extra supply? And for two reasons, no, it doesn't belong to us. And number two, it brings lots of stuff with it, debris,
yes,
dirt, and things like that.
Complicates it for the pumps, for sure.
That's right.
Okay. So you have to decide how open the valve needs to be back at the Colorado River. And I guess y'all are constantly negotiating and manipulating that valve.
Yeah, the pumps on the river itself, actually they're on Lake Havasu, but the pumps on the river itself, they're huge. 60,000 horsepower motors, six of them, and they're not on all the time because we're not entitled to enough water to leave them on all the time. So we run them when it's cheaper to run them, and then we turn them off. And we have a pretty steady schedule, actually, throughout the year of
okay.
when they should be on and when they should be off. The first section of the canal just east of the river itself is wider and deeper than the rest of the canal, so we can pump water into that and then take it out, and pump water into that and take it out as kind of a mini reservoir. But downstream of the Mark Wilmer pumping plant, which is the name named after a very instrumental lawyer that helped to craft all of laws relating to and contracts relating to CAP
with Carl Hayden and John
with
Rhodes,
all those other greats from the past, and we do name features after these folks. But there are very, very many then control points beyond that, gates that need to come up and speed up or slow down the water flow, check structures, and things like that. So that, as I said a moment ago, the goal is that out of our dozens and dozens of customers, everyone has a water that they ordered arrive when they ordered it to arrive. So we can control that flow. And it's all done remotely. We can do it manual if we have to, but you can imagine what that would be like to deploy hundreds of people along the canal to turn valves and turn things on and off. It's all electronic. We've got telemetry. We've got cables that go up and down, buried cables. We've got microwave controls. And we can sit here in Phoenix with three people and run the whole canal.
Wow.
You said there are 60,000 horsepower pumps. Do they
right.
all six need to run simultaneously when you're pumping water out?
They don't need to, but a lot of the time, or some of the time, we do run all six. More often, we run three or four together. But the beauty of this modular design is that we can go all the way from nothing to a whole bunch, depending on what the conditions are and what we need.
Okay.
That's over 300... And 60,000 horsepower.
Yeah. They're incredible. It's a sight to behold, and it's a thing to hear. We have to wear, of course, lots of hearing protection for that. And it is also a feeling to feel, because when those things are running, that hum just permeates your entire body when those things are running.
And do they run off of natural gas?
Electricity.
They are electric pumps.
They're electric pumps, right?
Interesting.
So you're constantly regulating how much is coming into the canal. Who has the coming east, the water's flowing from west to east, who has the first straw in the canal?
Off of our canal,
mm-hmm.
I believe that is the Harquahala Irrigation District.
Okay. And then the last straw is Tucson. How the complicated planning and formulating to determine we need to get just enough to Tucson so we don't wait. At the end of the canal, the straw has to be empty.
Pretty much. There is a tiny amount of storage at the end. Not enough really to act like Lake Pleasant Dunn where we put it in and take
it
out. It's just a place for some to go if there's nowhere else for it to go. But yes, it does need to be controlled that carefully. But the good news is we have the ability to do that. We can control that very, very precisely.
Do you ever have to clean it?
No.
Well, yeah, from time to time we do have to clean it. There's lots of dirt in surface water flowing from the Colorado River. There's lots of debris that washes in. We don't have what I would call a cleaning schedule necessarily, but any time that we may have to drain a section of the canal to do some other maintenance or something like that, boy, we're in there with the dozers and the loaders to get that silt that builds up out of there. Occasionally, if there's a problem, if we can determine that there is something that's obstructing flow or something like that, we will make that the maintenance task we have to go do to clean that stuff out. A lot of it does take care of itself. It will wash its way on down, but at some point you do have to take it out because it will accumulate. But at least so far, after 30 years of running the canal, there's been enough opportunity from our normal maintenance to get in there and keep that debris cleared out of the way to not cause too much of a problem.
Do you put a life expectation on a project like the CAP?
Well, a lot of large infrastructure projects like this are generally referred to as a 100-year type project.
Okay.
But they can last a lot longer than that if you maintain.
Properly maintained.
Right. The Salt River Project dams and canals, those are 100 years old, more than 100 years old. The Hoover Dam is nearing 100 years old. And if you maintain it, it could last forever. Our again, modular, the way that our canal and our pumping stations are put together, they're in similar pieces. So whether it's separate pumps or whether it's panels that make up this canal where one cracks or leaks or breaks or gets a hole in it, you pull that one out, you put another one in, and you're good to go until the next one goes. It will unlikely be that we'll have to replace whole huge sections at one time. It's now that it's there, as long as we maintain it, it's a little bit at a time, and it's like painting the Golden Gate Bridge, right? You just start at one end, and you paint it, you go back, and you do it again. It doesn't happen quite that linearly, but you get the idea. Something that happens over time.
Mr. Ted Cook, General Manager of the CAP, as you're listening to the program this morning and you're turning your faucet on to brush your teeth or comb your hair, wash your face, you can thank Mr. Cook. Mr. Cook, thanks for taking care of our water for us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We appreciate you joining us here at Roselle House and sharing this information about the Central Arizona Project, the dream child of Mr. Carl Hayden. Also, Mark Wilmer, Snell and Wilmer Law Firm, as well as Mr. John Rhodes, all guys that really were instrumental in thinking about putting this big ditch in. And I was just coming in. I was just finishing high school, coming into the construction trades when y'all were building the canal. And I can remember, you know, we sometimes would have to wait for a concrete order. Well, you're not going to get concrete today. You're going to get tomorrow at 2. Every truck we got is heading to Wyndon. Y'all took a lot of concrete, but boy, it's been worth every single yard of it.
It is.
Thanks a million for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.